Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Kiva, please call the roll.
Chair Tomko?
Here.
Vice Chair Tuck? Ranking Member Williams? Representatives Alvarez?
Here, ma'am.
Gracie Davis?
Here.
Kennedy?
Here.
Daly is excused. Dunkley, or I'm sorry, Daniels? Dunkley?
Here.
Garcia? Gonzalez Pittman?
Present.
Lopez?
Here.
Michael?
Here.
Rizzo? Temple?
Here.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Pre-K through 12 Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that all cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or are on silent mode. Well, good afternoon, members, and welcome to our last subcommittee meeting for the month of January. The focus of today's meeting is on the federal COVID relief funds that have specifically been allocated to Florida's early learning and K through 12 educational systems. As I mentioned at our first interim subcommittee, from three rounds of federal COVID relief funds, Florida has been allocated almost $14 billion. I've asked that the Department of Education make a presentation today that provides details on the three rounds of federal COVID relief funding, specifically the total allocation amounts, how much of each allocations have been dispersed, and when each round of funding must be fully spent. We have Suzanne Pridgen, the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Education, who is with us today to make this presentation. And Ms. Pridgen, welcome, and you are recognized to present.
So there were three federal acts that provided support for the Department of Education in response to COVID: the CARES Act, the CERSA Act, and the ARP. Today we're going to talk about the three programs that were funded through these acts: ESSER, which provided support to the public schools pre-K through grade 12, CCDF, which provides support for the child care sector, and ARP, Homeless Children and Youth, which provides education support for students experiencing homelessness. This slide gives you an overview of the awards and the current balance. I want to note that all of these awards have been appropriated and sub-awards issued due to the deadlines established in the federal acts. The first act was CARES. In CARES, we received $770 million for ESSER, and there's a balance remaining of less than $10 million. We received $223 million for CCDF, and all of those funds have been expended. The second act was CARISA. In CARISA, we received $3.3 billion for ESSER, and there's a balance remaining of around $830 million. We also received $635 million in CCDF stabilization funds, and there's a balance of around $100 million. And finally, under the ARP Act, we received $7.7 billion in ESSER funds, $46 million for homeless children and youth. You will also note in the CCDF program, we receive funds for child care stabilization and for CCDF discretionary projects. As you can see, the funds are generally spent on a first-in, first-out basis, so it's not surprising that there's a greater proportion remaining from the ARP Act rather than the other two. This chart shows the program start dates for each of the funds we are discussing and liquidation dates, and the final date for when the department must request the drawdown of these programs. You'll see two programs, CARES CCDF and CARES ESSER, that had start dates in the fiscal year 1920, while the remaining five programs began in 2021. CARES ESSER had the earliest liquidation date, which is actually this month, January of 2023. CARES CCDF, CARISA CCDF, and ARP stabilization funds must be all liquidated by September 23. CERSA ESSER has the next liquidation date of January 2024, followed by the ARP CCDF discretionary in September 2024. And finally, ARP ESSER and homeless liquidation data is the date is 2 years later in January of 2025. For the next part of this presentation, we'll take a deeper dive into each of the individual programs and what initiatives have been funded, the balances remaining, and the time frame for the expenditures. The largest of the federal COVID programs impacting K-12 education is ESSER. The ESSER program was funded in each of the three acts. So you can see on the slide, they're provided to address the impact that COVID has had and continues to have on elementary and secondary schools in Florida. 90% of each of the state's three ESSER awards were provided to school district and other LEAs in a formula grant for a broad range of allowable activities to prevent, prepare for, and respond to COVID. 9.5% of each of the state's three ESSER awards were for state discretionary projects or contracts to address the issues in responding to COVID, including learning loss. Up to 0.5% of each of the state's three ESSER awards could be used for the cost of administering the grants at the agency. Florida has been a leader among the states in its commitment to students in the wake of COVID. Florida prioritized returning students into the in-person instruction quickly while ensuring student safety. Florida attacked learning loss from the very beginning and has always remained firm in the assurance that Florida students will emerge from the pandemic stronger than ever before. Florida's response considered both the immediate emergency needs of the students as well as a careful plan recovery effort. Florida's spend rate reflects both the urgency of the response to COVID and the measured responsible planning for the state's recovery. In total, as of 11/30/22, Florida has spent 40.7% of its total ESSER funds, and that includes CARES, CARISA, and ARP. According to the data released by the U.S. Department of Education, Florida ranks 16th in the nation overall in terms of percentage of ESSER funds spent. Notably, however, when you compare larger states, Florida's percentage of funds outpaces the other large states. For example, New York has only spent 20.6%. California has spent 40.3%. This rate of spending shows that Florida is aggressively using the available resources that we have to respond to COVID, while at the same time gradually and prudently planning for the initiatives over the course of the full period of availability, which is ending January of 2025. Each of the three acts, and then we're going to go into the Child Care and Development Fund, which is CCDF. Each of the three acts also provided stabilization funding to support the child care sector. At least 90% of the stabilization funds must be provided to qualified child care providers to support the stability of the child care sector and during and after the COVID-19 pandemic. Up to 10% of the stabilization funds can be used for administrative purposes, building the supply of child care, and technical assistance. In the most recent act, which is ARP, funding was also provided for a discretionary CCDF program under which any allowable activity under the Child Care and Development Block Grant was permitted. Also under the ARP Act, funding was provided to support K-12 education for the homeless children and youth. A minimum of 75% of these funds had to be provided to our school districts and other local educational agencies to provide services to homeless children and youth. Up to 25% of these funds could have been used for state-level discretionary programs. However, Florida set aside only 5%, which meant that 95% of the funds we received went straight out to the school districts to provide these services for these children. Next, I'm going to provide further detail on the programs that have been funded under CARES, the expenditures to date, and the balances remaining. All ESSER funds for all three of the acts, again, have been either contracted or sub-awarded as applicable to meet the federal guidelines. As a reminder from the previous slide, these funds must be fully expended and paid out this month, January 30th. For the CCDF, funds had to be obligated by September 30th of 2022 and must be fully liquidated by September 30th of 2023 this year. 90% of the state's ESSER funds were required to be distributed to school districts in a formula grant to be used for a very broad range of activities in response to COVID. For ESSER 1, $693 million was distributed to school districts, of which only $2.5 million remains. This means that our school districts have spent more than 99.6% of the ESSER 1 formula funds. I note that having a small balance remaining is to be expected, as the invoices on budgeted items don't frequently add up exactly to the approved budget you start with. As I indicated, there's less than 0.5% remaining, so our district did a good job of planning and executing and going forward with their expenditures. Here we provide further detail on the individual discretionary programs that were funded. The programs highlighted in yellow are those aimed at addressing learning loss. A main initial area of focus in addressing learning loss was reading and literacy supports. For ESSER 1, we created a system of regional supports, hiring 18 state regional literacy directors. We established a literacy coach endorsement. We provided professional development on the best English language arts standards, including providing a reading endorsement pathway for teachers. We also provided funding to districts to purchase strong standards aligned curricula in reading. To address learning loss, districts also needed tools to accurately assess, identify, and track the progress of students who were falling behind. For this reason, the state used ESSER funds to develop a progress monitoring system, progress monitoring assessments, and to provide funding to districts to support their efforts. Programs that were aimed at ensuring continuity of instruction are highlighted in blue. This included expanding FLVS's capacity so that they could provide virtual instruction for up to 4 million students. Finally, programs for acceleration and emerging stronger are highlighted in green. For ESSER 1, this included providing free SAT and ACT exams to students. You may recall that SAT and ACT exams were briefly disrupted, which could have created delays in students articulating to college. This funding helped get the students back on track. The CARES CCDF funding of $223.6 million has been fully expended. Almost half of these funds were used to support first responders and healthcare workers' access to childcare during COVID. Remaining funds supported efforts to ensure rising kindergartners in fall of 2020 stayed on track, and the grants to early learning programs partners, providers, to ensure they stayed open and available to continue providing this high-quality childcare. I will now address those programs that were funded under CERSA, the second of the three federal acts. All of the funds have been subawarded or contracted and must be spent by next January, which is 2024. For CCDF, the state had to obligate the funds by September 30th, 2022, and the funds must be spent this year, September 30th, 2023. As in the other ESSER programs, 90% of the total award went back to the school districts through a formula grant. And what was unique about the ESSER 1 formula grant was that it was divided into several initiatives into the General Appropriations Act, with each district receiving their proportion in the following categories. So the advanced lump sum, this was provided to those districts having spent a greater percentage of their ESSER 1 funds who needed immediate access to support continued operations. We had the non-enrollment assistance. This was focused on locating and addressing the needs of the unaccounted students whose enrollment dropped off in the 2021 school year. We had academic acceleration, and this was focused on district initiatives to address learning loss. And the lump sum was the remainder of the formula grant that could be used for any allowable purpose in responding to the impacts of COVID. In the 2022 GAA, the legislature provided that any balance remaining in non-enrollment or academic acceleration would be moved to a new program for supplemental services, which was summer school or after school care or tutoring, excuse me. As you can see, the combined total we received for the ESSER 2 formula grant was approximately $2.8 billion, and as of mid-January, there was a balance of $613 million. This means that 78% of these funds have been spent. So, as I previously indicated, these funds have been fully awarded and now must be fully expended by January 30th of next year. Again, the remaining 10% of the ESSER II funds were authorized for state discretionary programs, following the same categories and color coding. Learning loss comprised 62% of the ESSER II discretionary funds. Continuity of instruction took 13%. Acceleration and emerging stronger comprised 18%. We reserved 5% for grant administration. And finally, in ESSER II, we had 2% of ESSER funds earmarked for early learning initiatives. For ESSER II, our learning loss efforts continued to focus on reading support. And using these funds, we provided funding to school districts for high-quality tutoring. We expanded the regional literacy structure by adding 12 new state regional literacy directors, bringing the total to 30, and added staff to better assist them and support the districts and schools with improving literacy achievement. We also created literacy professional development for elementary school principals to help them better support the teachers in the implementation of instruction grounded in the science of reading, and this training will deploy in spring of 2023. We also hosted boot camps to deliver the literacy coach endorsement that was created with the funds provided in CARES ESSER I. The state also used ESSER funds to support the Civics Literacy Excellence Initiative, a total of $106 million. Of that amount, approximately $97 million remains. However, please note that the Civics Endorsement course just launched on January of this year. Since educator stipends will be paid upon each cohort's completion, the funds for this item will be beginning to be paid in March, and the full amount of the allocation will be exhausted by September of this year. Florida's response to COVID also included help to engage and accelerate student learning in pathways that lead to post-secondary education and to credentials for high-demand, high-wage careers to ensure long-term student success. These initiatives included early college CTE training. In this program, participating schools must offer one or two programs of STEM, of study in STEM. Programs must result in a high school diploma, at least two industry-recognized certifications, and an AS degree in STEM from an accredited public post-secondary institution. Get There Faster, this supports the expansion of high school dual enrollment programs with a focus on high-demand credentials in computer science. Critical Workforce Needs, this provided support to develop career pathways with a stackable credential framework. This program is designed to phase out those programs leading to low-demand, low-wage credentials and introduce programs leading to those high-demand, high-wage credentials in areas such as education, healthcare, and law enforcement. And then we have the Career Planning Tool, which is a resource for K-12 students to explore their career and post-secondary options. As allowed under the CERSA Act, the Florida legislature used some of the state's award to shore up FDOE's budget in 21-22 by using these funds in lieu of general revenue in its budgets for salaries, contracted services, and assessments. As you can see, these funds have nearly been exhausted. And finally, the state reserved 5% of the discretionary cost for administering the program, all of the federal grants. As of January 6, 2022, CERSA CCDF funds of $535 million, or about 84% of the total allocation, has been expended. The two biggest initiatives funded with this grant were provider grants to assist with the cost of maintaining their operations and two payments of $1,000 in qualified disaster relief payment to early learning teachers. The Division of Early Learning anticipates being able to fully expend these funds remaining by this year, September 30th. Our third and final, maybe final act, is the ARP Act. Again, with ESSER III, all of the funds have either been subawarded or contracted. For both ESSER III and the ARP homeless programs, our subrecipients have to spend all of the funds by January 30th, 2025. For the CCDF stabilization funds, the state was required to obligate the funds by September 30th, 2022, and all the funds must be spent by this year in September. For the CCDF discretionary funds, the state is required to obligate the funds by this current year, September 30th, and the funds must be spent by September 30th of 2024. As with all the ESSER rounds, the state was required to give 90% of the state's award to the school districts in a formula grant. What was unique about the ESSER 3 formula grant was that the ARP Act required that the districts use at least 20% of their funds to address learning loss. For that reason, our formula grants were divided into a learning loss portion and a lump sum portion. As you can see, the state received a total of $6.3 billion for the ESSER 3 formula grants. Of that amount, districts have spent approximately $1.8 billion to date. We do know that this is not surprising, that there is more of a remaining balance right now with the ARP awards, because CARES and CERSA, I've interchanged those a lot, had earlier deadlines to spend the funds than ARP does. So the subrecipients would naturally spend those first funds first and then keep moving forward with the newer funds. So we do note that all of the districts have submitted their plans to fully expend through the ARP funds as well. The discretionary portion of the ESSER 3 funds were different than ESSER 1 and ESSER 2 because for ESSER 3, the state was required to have certain set-asides for the use of these funds. And the discretionary portion is 10% of the whole award, 5% for learning loss, 1% for summer school programs, 1% for after-school programs, 3% for discretionary programs, including up to 0.5% for the cost of administering these federal grants. So this slide shows the initiatives that make up the 5% set aside for learning loss, and that includes the high impact reading intervention and supports. This is to promote intensive interventions at schools with 50 or more students in VPK through grade 3 scoring below grade level in reading. We have regional resiliency hubs. This is working on a regional basis to support the school district's capacity for resiliency education and to support the district mental health coordinators. Instructional materials, funding was provided to school districts for the purchase of standards aligned curricula, particularly in areas where new revised standards require new curricula. Targeted math and STEM activities, subgrants to districts to support math and STEM education, helping bring real-world applications to STEM education. Supplemental programming. The largest component of our ARP state-level initiatives is the support of academic summer, after-school, and tutoring programs that help address the learning loss among students and capitalize on an out-of-school time to ensure that students are meeting grade-level expectations. We also have the DJJ program support, which the supplemental support is to address the learning loss within the educational program for the juvenile justice programs. And then we have parent mentoring and supports. And this is the support for the development of resources to foster parent engagement around student resiliency and student and character education. On this slide, you can see the 1% set aside for summer school and the 1% for after school. These programs were required set asides. And in these programs, subgrants have been issued to school districts and other LEAs. While the subgrants are fully awarded, these programs are in the beginning stages of implementation. We do expect the funds to be fully expended by the deadline, though. The expenditures in gray will make up the 3% discretionary portion of the ESSER 3 award. And as you can see, the vast majority of that set aside was the educator disaster relief payments. They were made to our teachers and principals that worked so hard to maintain the continuity of services to our students throughout the disruptions caused by COVID-19. This program has ended and the funds are almost exhausted. As with the other ESSER programs, 5% of the discretionary funds was reserved for grant administration. As previously discussed, the department provided 95% of the total ARP homeless award directly to districts so that they could serve our students who were experiencing homelessness. To date, the LEAs have spent $7 million and have a balance of approximately $36.8 million left to spend. The funds have been fully awarded, and we expect that they will be spent by the deadline of January 30th of 2025. The department reserved the 5% for discretionary projects, which is approximately $2.3 million. Of that amount, $1.8 million was provided in subgrants for our three regional education consortia to provide regional navigators to help districts identify and provide services to their students experiencing homelessness and to provide training and technical assistance to district staff in the region. This slide shows the status of the ARP CCDF funding. As of January 6th, earlier this month, 100% of these funds were obligated. $818 million, which is about 54% of these funds, have been actually expended. 95% of the stabilization funds, which is roughly $1.4 billion, will go directly to early learning providers via grants to providers that remained operational, provided quality care, provided care during non-traditional hours, and invested in their own workforce. DEL anticipates being able to fully expend these stabilization grant funds by 9/30/23 this year. 5% of this award, or about $84 million, was allocated to build a world-class workforce with incentives to recruit and train new teachers, upskill program directors, as well as Florida's early learning workforce. DEL is working diligently to spend the funds for this purpose, also this current year, September 30th. Now, this is the CCDF AR discretionary funding. This totals $952 million, which must be fully obligated, not spent, but obligated by this year. The purpose of these funds is to expand access to high-quality child care. ARP discretionary is 26% obligated. As of early January, roughly $249 million of these funds are obligated. We have an unobligated balance of $703 million that must be obligated by this September, and expended by next year, September 30th. DEL convened a work group that included representatives from the department, early learning stakeholders, and members of House and Senate to strategize on best allocations of these funds. The department will submit a spend plan in the near future that reflects these suggestions of the work group and allocates a portion of these funds. There are a number of initiatives that have been paid with the federal COVID relief funds for which the department is seeking an appropriation from a different fund source for the 23-24 fiscal year. And in the next slides, we'll review what those initiatives are. For K-12, we have three initiatives previously funded with ESSER funds for which we are seeking funding in this current year's LBR. We are seeking $3.5 million to fund the Civics Literacy Captains and Coaches, which provides support to districts in the area of civics, such as consultation, technical assistance, training, and resource development. We are seeking $5 million for regional literacy teams, which provide regional support to districts in the area of reading and literacy. A note for the regional literacy teams, a total of $2.5 million was provided in the current year GAA. Finally, we are seeking $1 million to continue to provide the online literacy coach endorsement, which was developed and implemented using ESSER funds. And we'll move to early learning piece of the LBR. This slide indicates the programs previously funded from CARES, CERSA, or ARP, CCDF funds, for which the department is seeking funding from another source in the future LBR. LBR asks for the $99.5 million in GR within the voluntary pre-kindergarten line item 82 for the VPK wage incentive program to provide funding to VPK providers who agree to pay a minimum of $15 per hour to all personnel performing VPK duties. Currently, over 5,000 providers, or actually 84% of the total VPK providers, are participating. We're asking for regular non-COVID CCDF funding for three items, within the school readiness line item, all of which were funded from ARP, CCDF, discretionary in 2022-23. We're asking for $40 million in the differential pay program. This provides eligible school readiness program providers the differential pay adopted under the Florida statutes based on established measures of quality. Providers receive a pay differential that ranges from 4% to 10%, depending upon their program assessment scores. Currently, 3,525 providers receive these differentials. We're asking for $70 million in gold seal differentials, which provides a payment rate differential to eligible school readiness providers participating in the gold seal quality care program, which was also established under Florida statute. Currently, 1,551 providers receive this differential. And finally, the $5 million for the special needs differentials, which provides eligible school readiness programs a higher rate if caring for any school readiness child with special needs, requiring additional care beyond the services required by the American with Disabilities Act. And that concludes my presentation on the status of the federal COVID relief funding that's flowed through the Department of Education. We're very proud of the progress our students have made. We are thankful for the dedication of our parents and teachers, and we look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you so much, Ms. Pridgen, for your presentation. Members, I will open it up for questions, if anyone. Representative Lopez, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I wanted to direct you to slide 9, which states that $2.5 million of round one of the ESSER funds was allocated to state districts via our formula grants, and it looks like they're going to likely revert back. Shame that that's happening, but can you tell us which school districts, districts, did not fully expend their allocation?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Bradford, Flagler, Hernando, FSU Lab School, and Levy County.
Representative Temple, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned several times the obligation date and liquidation date. Can you define that a little bit clearer for us?
Sure.
You're recognized.
Thank you. The obligation date is when the department must go into, we must have a contract or an encumbrance in FLAIR, as the state finance people call it. We have to make sure that it is officially obligated. Obligation does not mean, well, we're going to do this. It is an actual action taken by the department to go into a contract or a sub-grant or MOU of some kind. Liquidation means that's the end. And oftentimes when you go into obligation, okay, you set your obligation, and now you're invoicing against that obligation. So they have 6 months to get their money. And we follow up with them. Everybody that has money outstanding, you know, sometimes things can slip through, but everybody's been very good about providing invoices and submitting for their reimbursements.
I have a second question.
Okay, follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Each of the three rounds, there was money that was allocated, and can you tell us how many of those projects or issues that are recurring issues?
You're recognized. Thank you.
Go towards the end. We have these three items that we are asking for funding for 23-24 to continue for the department. This slide shows you for early learning. These are the items that we've asked for in additional or other funding sources besides any of this COVID funding.
Representative Rizzo, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for your presentation. And I came in late, and you might have already addressed it, so I'm sorry if I missed it. What happens to these funds that the school districts have been given if they're not used by their end date?
You're recognized.
Thank you. They will revert back to the federal government. And just like we do have a small balance in CARES ESSER 1, so those funds will revert We can, the state agency cannot use those funds.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, do you know if there's any plan at all, or if the feds have, if the federal government has given any indication as to, is there an appeal process or something if these funds do revert, whereby the Department of Education may request that they remain within the state to be used?
You're recognized.
Nothing is coming to the top of my head, but they send a lot of emails. A lot of documentation out there, a lot of correspondence. So, but we'll be on the lookout for those.
Representative Kennedy, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Commissioner, for your presentation. I'm a teacher, and I did a little quick math. I'm looking at slide 11. And again, Representative Rizzo, sort of piggybacking off of you, I add up 7.2 million of round one ESSER funds that look like they will revert. Back on slide 8, it looks like the liquidation date is January 30th. Is there any opportunity to capture some of that 7.2 million that could potentially be allocated to school districts instead of being reverted?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I'm looking at it thinking, what would that be? Because we've obligated our dollars. If there were any unobligated dollars, we would have to revert those. So if, just like Ms. Rizzo said, if there was an opportunity to get those back, we certainly would attempt to do that.
Ranking Member Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. On slide 10, you spoke about 71% of learning loss. Do we have any funding that's actually being converted back to the federal government that's not been used because of the time have run out?
You're recognized.
Thank you. We do have some funds that are going to a small amount that will go back from those districts due to different reasons. In fact, let me see real quick if I can pull up one of the reasons from one of the districts. That would be I'm so sorry, I can't locate that. But we do have some reasons why they are reverting those funds, and I'd be happy to provide that.
Thank you. You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you. On slide 14, you spoke about non-enrollment assistance. So the funding, there's zero balance. So have we located 75% of those children, or are we still in search of?
You're recognized.
I'm sorry. Most of those students were located through different avenues, and the reason those two are zero balance is because at the end of that year, it was reappropriated. So at that point, the funds that were going to be used were used, and so they were reappropriated for a different purpose.
You're recognized for your follow-up.
Thank you. Slide 17. The civics curriculum you spoke about, can you tell us how the $11 million is being used for that?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Let's see. I have that with me. look back for a second, Allie?
And 17. $11 billion balance left over.
We'll follow up with you on that one.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Vice Chair Tuck, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much for being here. My question relates to the summer enrichment programs that I think you referenced on slide 25. I just wanted to get a better understanding of what those programs entailed and if you know how many school districts actually use those appropriated funds in the summer of 2022.
You're recognized.
Thank you. A lot of those were programs, of course, that they held during the summer to so that we could use towards learning loss, and so there isn't anything lost in the middle part of those years. I do not have who used those funds in front of me. I suspect the majority of those are going to be spent this coming year, but it does take a while when you're preparing, a district is preparing for those summer type schools. They have to get their staff together. What programs are we going to use? Students that we're targeting, those kinds of things. So I suspect those funds will be expended this coming year, or majority of it.
Representative Alvarez, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Ma'am, back to slide 17, if you don't mind. The civics endorsement bonuses, can you give me a little bit of understanding of what that is? And it looks like no funds have been expended yet. Can we talk about a little bit of why that is?
You're recognized.
Let me see if I have this in my notes. This is Allie Jones. She's our deputy chief of staff. She's going to answer that question for you.
Hi, Allie. Hi, you're
Chair.
Recognized.
Hi, members. So the Civic Seal of Excellence endorsement is a kind of first of its kind in the nation approach to civics professional development. And that endorsement program was just open for educators. So we developed it with some of these funds, and it was just finished and open for educators this month, actually. So educators are enrolling now. And then educators that complete up to the first, I think, 20,000 are eligible for a $3,000 stipend. So that's why you see that $61 million is on hold as those educators complete, which we believe the first cohort will start completing in March. Then we will be expending that $61
million. Chair, follow up.
Yes, and can I ask a question? What is the link to that with the COVID money?
The link? So we link that with learning loss, just like reading and mathematics, and creating well-rounded citizens that understand our government and how to participate is just as important as one of our core educational components.
Sorry about that. You're recognized,
ma'am. Is that recurring? We're going to do that $61 million recurring. Is that what's happening or no?
You're recognized.
Sorry. No, right now that is a one-time, the first 20,000 teachers that will complete are eligible for that bonus this time.
Representative Daniels, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My question is in reference to page 31. And, okay, so I understand the special needs and the VPK wage incentive, and the gold seals is for when they operate above license and standard. But can you please explain what the differential pay program is?
You're recognized.
I'm going to defer to Matt Mears. He's our director of early learning. So he'd be happy to come talk to you about that.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Suzanne. Thank you, Madam Chair. The differential pay program is based on last week we talked about the class assessment, which is across nine dimensions, looking at the adult-child interaction to evaluate that environment. We know the more attentive the adults are, the more interaction there is, the more brains. When they get that score, the higher their score, now there's a minimum contracting score of four, but as they move up above that four, five is sort of like the, you know, it's considered a super high quality center. So there's incentives that they would get, I think, as Suzanne mentioned, up to 10% as a, like a, you know, if your payment's going to be 100, if you are at the right level, you could get a $110 payment. That 10% bonus is an add-on. So those, that's to go to our quality centers to make sure they have the resources to continue to provide those high quality centers.
Thank you very much.
Representative Gonzalez-Pittman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nice presentation.
Thank you.
Has there been a summative or a formative evaluation done on student outcomes with after the money has been spent? We got a lot of money, and we implemented it. Has this affected student achievement?
You're recognized.
In a formative way.
So we do expect to measure this, and certainly through progress monitoring that's going on right now as well. So we expect to succeed, but it will be evaluated, and we'll see those in future years as well. It's really, we feel like this has been so long ago when the first act came in and when COVID happened, and it feels light years away, but it really has just, it's been a couple of years at this point. So we'll need for future years as well to see the impacts as well.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you. So we really don't know if the programs that we're asking for, I think it's on page 30, have been effective.
You're recognized.
Thank you. We do believe that they have been effective. So, and I'd be happy to provide you with some more, basically, return on investment is what we're asking, what you're asking, and so we can provide some data on that.
Great. Representative Michael, you're recognized.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, thank you for your presentation. If you would go to slide on 11, what I'm noticing is from the round one ESSER funds, there is an item entitled progress monitoring and data informed supports. And then if I look at slide 16, from round two of the ESSER funds, there's an item entitled the same thing, progress monitoring data collection. Are these the same issues? And I have a follow-up question to that.
Absolutely, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. They are related.
You're
so recognized. We do want to keep measuring and seeing where our students are.
Okay, if these are the, and you say that they are related, why are the round two ESSER funds fully used prior to the round one ESSER funds being fully spent? And it looks like we're just reverting again. We're going back. We're reverting a little over $1 million back to the federal government.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So sometimes what we found is when we first received the CARES funding, we fully obligated those. But then, and we thought that was going to be the one and done act. We didn't realize at the time there were two and three coming as well. So when ESSER 2 came along, so we need some data collection. And sometimes, and I can't tell you exactly what it is, and I'll be happy to get back to you on that, but those contracts for who we're contracting with, we may have paid out sooner because they're already working on the data collection. So, but I can get information back to you on what exactly each of those pieces are and why one's spent and one's not.
All right. Oh, you're recognized for a question. Representative Bracy Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, and thank you for that presentation. I, too, am very interested in measures of achievement and success.
Okay.
So perhaps in the future we could be provided with that information. I see on page 24, $20 million is allotted for DJJ program support. Could you talk, and I know that that doesn't have to be spent until 2025, if I'm correct in understanding this, but could you talk a little bit about how that money will be spent specifically? And so that I don't have to ask a follow-up question, could you answer that same question regarding the parent mentoring support?
Okay.
You're recognized.
So for the DJJ program support, this was part of ESSER 3, and part of that was learning loss, and that we asked the DJJ programs to basically follow along with the criteria that ARP ESSER 3 had to go by as well, but we wanted to support them as appropriated in the GAA. So these programs will also get the portion, the $20 million of the funds to use on allowable uses as stated in the ARP, which are very broad uses, but they also have to provide learning loss data at the end too. And I can send you what the criteria is, what the allowable uses are for each act, so that you can see and compare what the uses for all of these dollars can be used for. But it's really to support those programs in the same fashion that the districts are receiving funding also. And then you asked parent mentoring and supports. So this was to develop resources that would get parents more involved, and around the resiliency piece and character education. I will look to Allie to see if she has some more information that goes deep, a deeper dive into that for you.
Yeah, a lot of, Suzanne was kind of right on track. Sorry, do I need to be right?
You're good. You're good.
These funds are provided to help provide or create and develop and distribute resources for parents to become more involved in their child's education as it relates to resiliency, character education, understanding, things that are going on in the child's classroom, progress monitoring. So a couple initiatives there that are, again, geared toward providing resources for parents to become more engaged in their child's education.
All right. Well, looking like those are all the questions we have for you, Ms. Pridgen. We appreciate you being with us here today. And
thank you.
Hope that some of the questions that were answered today, maybe some of the follow-up, if we could
absolutely
get that, and we'd appreciate that. Members, I really appreciate this thoughtful discussion today, and I look forward to continuing these conversations and opportunities as we move through this subcommittee. This concludes our member agenda. However, we have one person in the audience that would like to speak, which I look at that. Good job, Representative Bracy Davis. There we go. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative Temple moves we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned.